ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What would it take for you to become a farmer? If you've been following the multiple inquiries into how farmers are treated by retailers, you might be tempted to answer quite a lot. But despite the challenges and trials of producing food, there are still people keen as mustard to give life on the land a crack. Hello, I'm Callie Buchanan. Take, for example, Marg and Alan Ballantyne. When they first bought a farm in the 1980s, all the former miners wanted was an escape to the country. But the North Queensland couple soon discovered a passion for growing one of our best-loved fruits, strawberries. Now, after 3 decades in the industry and 15 years of running a popular agritourism destination, they're passing their legacy on to someone new. Ashley Bagshaw has the story.
Every winter morning for the past 30 years, Marg and Alan Ballantyne have risen in the early hours, pulled on their boots, and ventured into their strawberry fields. The couple didn't discover their love of farming until a fateful trip to Cameron's Pocket, about an hour north of Mackay.
Back in the 80s, we were both working out at German Creek, and we met some friends out there that owned a property across the other side of here. They said, come on down for the weekend to Cameron's Pocket. It was all rightio. And we come down here, and they said, I'll take you up to this waterhole, it's pretty famous. All rightio. And there was a for sale sign going up to the waterhole. So, oh, look at this here, we could buy this little block. It was 60 acres at the time. So it started from there, we bought that block. And then this other block came up for sale, 130 acres on it. So we started playing around with that. Not with strawberries, we tried a lot of crops. We had citrus.
And
pawpaws. And then we thought, oh, we'll sell this product up at Ely Beach. So we go there trying to sell oranges and mandarins and a bit of juice. And I thought, God, that guy's got a lot of people in his store. What's he selling? And it was strawberries. I thought, wow, now there's an opportunity. We should start growing a few strawberries.
In 1995, the couple officially switched to strawberries. And the rest, as they say, is history. But it hasn't always been smooth sailing. Marg and Alan started out supplying to supermarkets and local businesses, but quickly found themselves frustrated by the lack of returns. That's when they made the life-changing choice to completely pivot their business model.
We're not getting the money that we deserve for the effort we're putting in. So, oh, let's try the highway. It really took off. Oh, this will work. We'll keep doing this. And then the highway got busy and busy. We dropped the Ely Beach markets out of it and all the retailers and just sell them direct on the highway.
Their little roadside stall sat on the side of the Bruce Highway at the tiny town of Kaelin. It encouraged travellers to make a stop at the town, which most had never even heard of. The little stall has even garnered an international reputation, according to their son, who had a chance encounter with a fan of the farm in the United States.
Young Jack, and he was over in Las Vegas, and they were in a queue lining up for something, I think it was some sort of food. This American lady picked up their accent, said, oh, are you kids Australian? Yeah, yeah. So we just came back from a trip over there, and they got talking. She said, you know, the best job I've ever eaten was on this little highway road stall, and they were unbelievable, and our son Jack pricked his ears up. Oh, that'd be my mum and dad and Kaelin. So they were all excited talking to these people about the strawberries.
The couple's Pick Your Own Attraction, which opened 15 years ago, also draws visitors from across the country.
Margaret come up with the idea, oh, why don't we try to pick your own? Oh, yeah, that's probably an idea. So off we go down to Victoria to the Mornington Peninsula. They had a big setup with, oh, this is us. So come back from Victoria, found an old coffee machine and started doing coffee and scones. From there we just built up. And like today, it's, you know, it's a big affair with Pick Your Own, and we still try to keep the highway going.
But despite the widespread acclaim, Marg Ballantyne says the most rewarding part was seeing the return of familiar faces.
watching all the people that come out here. They're pregnant when they come here, and they're still coming now, and their kids are 13 years old. You know, we've grown up, we're like your grandparents to those kids.
Deb McLucas founded the Greater Whitsunday Food Network, an alliance of local growers which ran from 2016 to 2021, with the aim of establishing the region as a culinary destination. She says the Ballantines were early adopters of agritourism and highlighted its potential in the Greater Whitsunday region.
But I think that certainly demonstrated to farmers within the region that there was a strong interest for people to get onto farms and have that authentic experience. We certainly feel very glad that they were involved with our efforts to raise the profile of food and agritourism in the region.
After growing the business from a tiny stall to an agritourism destination, Marg and Alan have decided that it's time for the next chapter. But the new owners of the farm, Tim Malloy and Rose Brady, hope to follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, we plan to continue running as Alan Marg did.
The couple, who traded their mining business in Mackay for a life on the land, says they have memories of visiting the farm with their five children. Marg and Alan will be on hand for one more season to make sure that legacy continues.
We're very appreciative of them hanging around to teach us and mentor us through this.
But the Ballantines themselves are trading the farm for a seaside view. However, they have promised to always be around to offer advice or a helping hand.
We just want to see them go ahead leaps and bounds, and they have the potential to do that. You know, everything's in place now, the name's there, the branding, and if they just follow what we tell these guys, they can't go wrong with growing the strawberries. They'll be able to grow them and just got to entice the people that come out here to keep coming, you know.
That story from Ashley Bagshaw. It isn't easy to make a go of it in farming, but that hasn't discouraged Jared Agostinelli, who successfully took over his family's business. Jared was a mechanic before he joined his father on their farm on the Sunshine Coast in southeast Queensland. And in 8 years, he's moved away from strawberries and avocados to concentrate on macadamias and passion fruit. He tells Jennifer Nichols about the ups and downs of his passion for fruit.
We started with 1,600 vines and each year we grew from there. Yeah, now we got 4,300 vines just over.
And what are the good and challenging things about growing passion fruit?
The good things, you know, it's quite rewarding turning a paddock into a fully commercial farm, meeting a lot of workers, a lot of backpackers. You build a lot of relationships with reps and local co-ops. Downfalls, obviously rain, weather, things you can't control, pests and disease, more things you can try and control, but it's very expensive to do it, and the lack of time to get it done by yourself. It's getting harder and harder to get staff, reliable staff. Staff we do get here, they have been quite good, but you obviously go through a lot of stuff with seasonal crops, so yeah, it's probably the biggest downfall.
Passion fruit tend to produce most of the year though, don't they?
Yeah, so 10 months of the year I'd say we're picking. There's probably 2 months of the year that's a little bit slow, but we're still picking every second or third day, so it's nearly year round. Fantastic for cash flow, not so good if you want to have any time off or grow other crops. But that's just the way it is. I guess it is good, it's a full-time job, and it is a little bit easier to keep those seasonal workers if it's year-round.
How many generations of the Agostinelli's been farmers?
Good question. I think I'm fifth generation in Australia, obviously a Italian background, so a lot before that in Italy. But yeah, we've only been out here on the coast for 27, 28 years. The parents are from out at Inglewood, the Underwinny area. Dad's parents and grandparents are out there too when they come over from Italy, so yeah, not too long, but hopefully a few more to come.
Is your dad still farming?
Yeah, he's semi-retired, I guess you could call it. They travel around the country a little bit. And yeah, when they come home, there's plenty of work if they want it. And if they don't, we'll hop in the motorhome and go again.
Sounds sweet.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Did they start the farm here or did you start the farm here?
So I'm a mechanic by trade. I was at Toyota for 7 or 8 years. So they had strawberries here, avocados and macadamias. Then we expanded when I come back to the farm in 2016. So that's when we put the passion fruit in, just to, you know, a bit more of an income, a bit more work, because the strawberries are seasonal, so the max. at least with the passion fruit, week to week you get a different price. Yes, it is terrible sometimes. Yes, it's fantastic at sometimes, but it varies all year round. Whether the macadamias, you get your set prices, it's a little bit easier for budgeting, I guess, for the season. You can sort of break up the inputs for the year.
And how old are you, Jared?
32 in July. Yeah, I've been here 8 years this year.
Well, those mechanical skills that you've got certainly would come in handy on the farm.
Yeah, they save a hell of a lot of money, that's for sure. There's not too much you can't really figure out and do. A few things you scratch your head and ponder a bit, but you sort of figure it out. I was very particular when I come back from Toyota, processes and things that need to be done properly, and now it's sort of like, get into it, get it done, sun's up. Has helped a hell of a lot, saved a lot of time and money, but yeah, those little particular things I used to have are sort of out the window now.
So what are we looking at for the crop?
So obviously this is passion fruit. Our plantings, when we planted, the numbers in the ground, what varieties, total plants. Pretty well in a nutshell, in 2022 it flooded. We lost all our vines, every last one of them died. So all the vines you see here now are max of 16 months old because it's too wet. So that was pretty disheartening for a little
while. Did this actually go under, or it's just so much water it was basically?
No, it wasn't under. It was probably, you know, 4 inches of water, like a bit of a sleet, I guess. We're pretty flat here, so it is hard for it to run away. We've changed a few farming practices since then to help that, but you know, it's just a freak event. You can't get 1200 mil of rain and expect it to disappear overnight. So
in what sort of time frame?
3 weeks. In February 22, it just didn't stop raining. It's, you know, it's Australia. It's on fire, it's underwater. There's nowhere in between, really. But, yeah, really disheartening. But, yeah, all these vines are pretty well brand new, 16 months, whatever they are. But, yeah, combined between the flamencos and the sweethearts for March to April, March last year, 23 to April this year, we've packed 15,489 boxes. And kilo-wise, that's 162,766 kilos, so 162 tonne. Passion fruit. So apparently it's quite high yielding. I don't know what the industry average is. I probably should know that, but that's a lot of fruit.
That's very impressive when you consider how light a passion fruit is.
Yeah, it's a lot of fruit. But yeah, if the sweetheart premium boxes, 6,880 boxes, 61 ton. Flamenco premium boxes is 7,378. That's 88 ton, just over. And first grade, which is just not marketable because of blemishes, I guess you could call it. 1,231 boxes, so yeah.
And do they go to process? Who do you sell to?
Mainly Sydney. I've got a couple of people, agents in Sydney I deal with. I've dealt with one for probably 4 years now. The other fellow's quite new. He's Italian also, so you get along fairly well. But yeah, those two, I've got two in Melbourne as well, but just with freight and the extra day to get to Melbourne, it's just, you know, freight's very expensive now. They do a really, really good job, but we don't get that extra buck out of the box to go to Melbourne, so they have to be well above Sydney's price to bother sending down there. And Brisbane. There's not enough people in Brisbane. That's the problem with Brisbane. The markets are fine, but there's just not enough people getting through. So just target the people down in Sydney. Transport's a bit more, but it's definitely worthwhile from Brisbane. So, yeah, it's just not quite worthwhile going to Melbourne at this stage.
Passionate passion fruit farmer Jared Agostinelli speaking to Jennifer Nichols. The Queensland Government is among the multiple authorities holding inquiries examining the relationship between farmers and retailers. At its first hearing in Bundaberg, fruit and vegetable growers like Trevor Cross shared their concerns about the sustainability of the supply chain.
We're not direct suppliers to the supermarkets, but we actually go in through agents to supply to the supermarkets. We've stuck with that way just to try and get what we call a better deal. The marketplace is a true market. When someone buys out of the market, there's no control on market price. So that's why we've kept using that system, because I always believe it will go back to that system, and that's the system it should be. Everyone should buy in a market to actually make a true market. We grow a variety of different stuff, like we grow zucchinis and capsicum, tomatoes, peas, beans. So we got just a set program we do every year. We haven't actually changed the volumes. In saying that, over the last 5 years we haven't changed the volumes, but before that our volumes were continually growing. We got to a point where I think we're at the saturation point for our farm. So, yeah, we're at actually, as I say, saturation point. So if we grow any extra, we actually haven't got the markets for any extra. So we're at the size there we're happy to sit stable with. We've probably decreased about 20% this year on some lines. because I think there's too much of that product getting grown now. So that's where we're at. We'll diversify back into a bit of sugarcane and general stuff like that now.
But Trevor Cross remains hopeful there will be change.
I just hope when they look into it that they realise the farmer hasn't been getting a fair portion of what the consumer's actually been paying for product. Been well under cost. There's been that much legislation put on the agricultural industry for the reef management and all that. So the farmers are actually losing a lot of money. And at the end of the day, the consumers are thinking that the farmer's making the money. The farmer's not getting anywhere near enough to even survive under. You've got transports costing more money, fuel, electricity, labour's going up in price. So our cost of production's gone up probably about 50%, and our paybacks are down about 30% on where they should be. So the government's trying to convince everyone the price of our food's going to come down in the supermarkets, but if we're all paid a fair amount, and that's from your biscuits to all the factories, the fruit and veggies, so if they're paid a fair price, the top price can't come down. If there was a legislation put into place that the supermarket couldn't charge any more than 45% above its cost or what they purchased from the farmer, then maybe, or just a percentage that's set there, so we can all actually get a piece of the pie. And at the moment, you're going to have a lot more farmers leave the industry if it's not something that's not legislated or subsidised in the ag industry.
He's just not sure how much the state government can do.
I think all your governments have got to do something. Plus, it's at least there's an awareness out there that the agricultural industry is suffering now. And I think a lot of your major supermarkets or your buyers from supermarkets weren't actually aware what they're actually doing to the ag industry. Like, they've been educated that you buy for not much, yourself a lot, it's good profit, they get bonuses, but in doing that they're harming a lot of people.
Bundaberg fruit and vegetable grower Trevor Cross. The committee is being chaired by Labor member for Bundaberg, Tom Smith. In the state election scheduled for October, he'll be up against LNP candidate and the current chief executive of Bundaberg Fruit and Vegetable Growers, Bree Watson. Representing the horticulture section in the region, she had hoped others would also get a chance to participate in a local hearing.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of farmers between Bundaberg and Cairns that perhaps can't be seen by the committee in person, so I really do hope that they've put in submissions to get their views across. It was really important for us just to, I guess, show that there are a lot of complexities with this whole sector and with this entire topic. And if nothing else, if the committee can really understand that and get their head around the complexities and the fact that the supply chain is really quite big, then I think that will be a good outcome, because a lot of people hold skepticism as to, you know, what outcomes could come out of this. But it's so important to share the stories of, price gouging, of unfair practices, because we do acknowledge that they are an incredibly important component in the supply chain, our major retailers. Without them, we wouldn't be able to sell our produce through those major retail stores. So we need to acknowledge that they're there to maximise profits for their shareholders, but they also know that without the farmers, they won't have fresh produce there. So without sustainable farming systems, there's a lot of consumers that will go without.
She says many growers are still too scared to speak out.
You know, a lot of people don't want to put their name to these things. There's a lot of people that are concerned about appearing in front of the committee. So we have asked for a closed room opportunity to put growers in front of the committee to ensure that they hear from real farmers that are experiencing real challenges. And we're hoping that we do get that opportunity. But some of the challenges that have been raised with us have been around, essentially those negotiation skills that, a lot of the retailers, they're master negotiators and they have a job to do, and they need to get the best price that they can for the product. But farmers can be negotiators too. And so we've been calling for assistance for them to be upskilled in that. We've offered it here locally before, that sort of training, but it's incredibly expensive. But it's such an important component of being a business owner, negotiating the best price for the hard work that you do. But we have made, several calls to look into the transparency of some of those communications, some of the contracts that are in place. We've called for them to look at the difference between direct and indirect supply. So the direct suppliers have to jump through a whole heap of different, hoops and programs that the indirect suppliers don't necessarily do. So why would you be a direct supplier in that case? We've looked at, we're calling for looking at the chain of responsibility. At what point does that transfer onto the retailer? It seems to be that the grower takes all of the risk and then even more some, even at the end.
Whatever happens, she says the contribution of farming to the economy needs to be acknowledged.
We're talking billions of dollars, even to the local economy. So in terms of what we're providing to Queensland, we are a massive food bowl. A lot of our farmers are really putting a lot of efforts now into exporting their products because they're just not getting the price that they need for the high quality produce here domestically. So, if we're increasing those export markets, that gives them access to a better price. It, reduces the pressure on the domestic floor, and then hopefully that will help a lot of growers get a better price for their product. But massive value of this industry, not only to Bundaberg, to Wide Bay, Queensland, but Australia as a whole. We're talking national food security that our producers are contributing to. A lot of growers have said to me that whatever comes out of it, if there are changes, those changes will probably put back onto the growers to bear the cost of it. So we need to make it really clear that if there's going to be any changes, that they are sustainable and that it's not the growers that will be paying for that. There's also a couple of things that could happen at the national level that this state committee could actually contribute to. So if we could get some sort of a food donation tax, if there's a tax incentive for our farmers to be able to donate that produce to those in need, then that would actually help with a lot of the product that doesn't make it to the domestic floor. So there's things that this committee can be doing to advocate for farmers on a national level.
The Chief Executive of Bundaberg Fruit and Vegetable Growers, Bree Watson. The committee is expected to deliver its report to the Queensland Government in May. If you'd like to explore even further what it takes to put food on plates around the world, join me, Callie Buchanan, and our team of specialist reporters from across Queensland as we break down the big issues of rural life, from the food you eat to the clothes you wear and the home you live in. It's all available for you on the ABC Listen app. Just favourite the Queensland Country Hour or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.